Happy 1st of July. I just popped over in the office, about to head out of town, and John and Kristen told me to come in and kick it off today, so I thought I'd do that before we got moving. So John's queuing it up, and then I'll kick everything off for us today. Excited to have a call this week. I initially said last week we weren't going to have one, but Kristen and John met with me on Monday and said they had some important things they wanted to share that we've been getting a lot of questions and feedback on. And I don't think we ever, to my knowledge, we've done this training before other than a little bit in some workshops and some other stuff. So, okay, so let's get started. All right, welcome everybody to the Paper Profits Mastermind and Funding Group Training Webinar. Today is July 1st, 2015. Myself, Aaron Halderman, and Kristen Bullen will be your host of today's training. Happy 1st of July and happy Independence Day, 4th of July. And Travis got double duty, so they're celebrating Canada Day and the U.S. Independence Day. So I will be heading out of the office here shortly and due back Tuesday morning. And so will the entire Capstone Funding Group and Max ROI Media teams will all be back in the office on Tuesday. So I hope everybody has a wonderful time with their family and friends and celebrating our country's independence. And please be safe. So let's go ahead and get started. We have what we're going to cover today. I just wanted to give a quick update on the Seller Finance and Trust workshop that we have coming July 16th and 17th. I'm going to turn some time over to John for some of the updates in the members area, and then we'll go into the training webinar where Kristen's going to share three things. One, she's going to share with you what we had to do to finish off our Subject 2 deal in Arizona and to get all that ready, and she's going to take you behind the scenes on the Craigslist ad that we ran. And I want to steal a little bit of thunder, but I'm not going to. I'm going to let her share a response that we got, I think, within half an hour after the post last night on somebody wanting to do that deal that we have in Arizona. So then she's going to take us through the underwriting worksheet that we do, and then also a late calculation, which we'll be going over in depth, how we do lates and arrears. And so these are the things that all take place once we've boarded a loan. This is what we have been doing for a while now. For some of you that have been in the group for a while, you'll notice this is probably something that we hadn't covered early on with you guys. So thanks for everybody being on the call and participating. So just a quick reminder, July 16th and 17th, we're back at the Hilton San Diego Resort and Spa. It's the same as NIS. Here's what I'll say. It's a great venue. We love it. It's peak season here in San Diego for tourists and, you know, families and everything going on. So I think the hotel is sold out. If not, they may have some waterfront hotels. So if that's out of the budget, then we have some additional hotel info. The venue is just right next door to Old Town, as well as Hotel Circle in Mission Valley. So we'll send out some additional information so you have plenty of options to choose from and to meet your needs. We're excited for the guest speakers that we have that will be teaching about buying, brokering, and creating your own seller finance notes, and especially some upcoming law changes that go into effect August 1st. If you want to go to notetools.com / July workshop, you can see the agenda and speakers and all the topics that will be covered. So if you'll do us a favor, go to the RSVP page in the members area on the live events page and in the members area and RSVP, even if you're only coming for a day. And please, if you're bringing your business partner or spouse or family member, then please RSVP them as well so we get a good head count, and we'll send out a email reminder as well. Just want to throw up all the upcoming events that we have. So for those of you that didn't join us last week and, were traveling and that are listening in or watching today's training. July 16th and 17th in San Diego, our Seller Finance and Trust Workshop. August 12th through the 14th, which is, that's not a mistake, it's 3 days, we'll be including our workouts Wednesday. That'll be something we're coming back to. We'll be doing 6 times a year again from here on out. And so we'll, and that'll be also in San Diego on non-performing notes specifically. September 10 and 11, again in San Diego, we'll be on seller finance and raising capital. We're going to share some of the things that we do and some of our other colleagues that they do for raising capital and structure and what we found to be effective. And then October 21st through the 24th, we'll be going, having on non-performing notes, again in San Diego. We'll do a workouts Wednesday that'll also coincide with a Thursday-Friday workshop. And then Saturday, we'll be doing a special event. So we hope you can plan ahead, and I gave you several months notice ahead of time. So we hope to have everybody in the group attend that Saturday session, hopefully the whole time. On November 19th and 20th, again in San Diego, we're going to be covering seller finance and self-directed IRAs. And then January 20th through the 23rd will be NIS Live, back at the Hilton San Diego Resort and Spa. And so we're excited to have you out for that. That does include bonus day and a VIP upgrade for everyone. And just so I'm clear, I think we've had so many new people join the Mastermind and Funding Group as part of a membership benefit that you get to come to all the live events and workshops that we do included in your membership, with the exception of NIS. You just pay for a standard ticket and receive a free VIP upgrade for you and your business partner. We have several updates. I think we have 5 or so in the members area. I'm going to let John peruse through this at this time and take you through that. He's we appreciate his hard work, and again, we appreciate everybody's feedback and welcome your continued feedback on how we can best provide a good user experience for you, both live and in the comfort of your own home, through the resources and stuff that we provide. Just another update, shortly we'll be moving, it's already in progress, but you won't notice a change for the time being, but we're going to be moving all of the training education over to Note Tools, Paper Profits, and NIS, and so you'll receive an update when we've made that transition and no longer be logging in on the Capstone Funding Group side. So I'm going to turn the time over to John. He's going to take us to the members area update. And then from that point, John's going to transition to Kristen, taking us through the Craigslist stuff we've been doing to get our stuff listed, and then going through our underwriting and late calculation worksheets. Again, happy Independence Day, everyone. Hope you have a safe travels and trip. Look forward to seeing y'all here in a week and a half at the workshop, if you can make it live. If you can't, we're going to try and do our best to live cast it. It'll just depend on the bandwidth and everything we have on the venue. We'll see how that goes. If not, then, you know, within the week, we work really hard just to get that up for you so you can have all the audios and videos at that time. So, all right, John, take us away.
All right. So, hello, everybody. So I'm going to walk you through some of the updates that we've done recently in the last week inside of the members area. One of the things we did was we did update the list of attorneys that we use. And this is, as is all the resources we're going to talk about today, it's on the resources page inside of the members area once you log in. Under legal resources, we're going to find the list of attorneys. And we update that regularly as we have a new attorney we want to add, or if there's someone we want to take off. We do continue to update that, but we did add several in the last week. So if you want to download the latest one, that's where you're going to find that. The next thing is we added a call checklist. If you haven't seen that, here's what it looks like. It's got the checklist of, and Kristen put this together, of what to go through when you're on a call. And Kristen is actually going to be referencing this a little bit later, but you can go ahead and download this as a PDF that's available for you inside of the members area. You can download for when you're doing your calls. So definitely check out that resource. And again, Kristen's going to cover that today. We also added some inbound voicemail scripts. And this is something that Aaron put together. These are the scripts that we use at Capstone Funding Group for all inbound calls. And you can see, here's just a screenshot of them. But this includes the verbiage that we use when people call in or leave a message. So you can go ahead and use that if you have a voicemail system, or for when people are calling you, you have a little script that you can use for that. We also added some outbound message scripts, which includes the Miranda. And here's a little screenshot of that. Again, you can find this in the members area in the resources page. But this is what you would want to say for any outbound calls as well. And then we also added the Craigslist ad example that Aaron had referenced. And I'll have Kristen, if you want to go ahead and unmute, then we'll go ahead and have you discuss the Craigslist ad. But you can find this inside of the members area. It's at the bottom of the resources page as a PDF. So you can actually download this and check out the ad. And Kristen, if you're unmuted, why don't we go ahead and if you can explain what this ad is and how it was used and then kind of the results that came from that, that would be great. We can get you unmuted here. Hello, Kristen. Okay, 1 second.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing? I'm glad to be here. Very excited to be a part of the call today. Want to start out with this Craigslist ad, and I'm currently up to about 15 responses with rentals, and one, I just got a response for a 3-year lease with the option to purchase, so that's great action here based on this ad that you're looking at. So part of the REO checklist that we're going to, that I'm testing currently before we post it on the members area, it is being tested. And so I just want to make sure that it's on point before I share it with y'all. But part of that is the, once you foreclose on a property, you want to decide if are you A, going to sell it, or are you B, going to rent it. So once you decide that information, you're going to go ahead and market your property. Craigslist is a free resource tool to market your property. There's a lot of other ways, but this is just what I've been using, and it's free. So if it works for us, we wanted to share. So it's just in the body. It's you kind of want to pull. I would recommend going to several different resource sites, realtor.com, to kind of get the area so that you can speak on the area and kind of make it enticing for prospects. So that's what we're currently using for the REO and any post foreclosure prior to market.
Okay. Awesome. Sounds good. Well,
anybody have questions on the Craigslist ad?
It looks like Gloria said, how are people seeing the house since you're remote?
That's a great question. We do, we have a big network of boots on the ground in a lot of areas around the country. So make sure that you build your network of REO brokers so that you can have those boots on the ground, because it does, you're taking a risk. You can put a lockbox and you can do a virtual walkthrough and let them have access to the property via lockbox code. And then as they leave the property, they call you and you can go that route, or you can find in your, in the community, somebody to actually work with you in the property management stages.
Okay. And then Chris, he says, how much to buy it?
Make me an offer.
Email Kristen if you want to buy that, Chris. We'll get you taken care of. Okay, if anybody has any other questions on that, let us know.
Okay.
Did you have something you wanted to say? One last point.
Yeah, no, it's a nice property. If anybody wants to jump on and check it out, there's some nice photos, and I'm here to talk.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go ahead and dive into the worksheets here. Kristen, I'll go ahead and hand this over to you. We'll dive right in. And then as you guys have questions as she's going through this, feel free to put them in the questions box And we'll go through those at the end of each of the walkthroughs here. And so, Kristen, I'm going to go ahead and let's get this switched over to you. One second here.
Okay, just let me know if you can see my screen.
Okay, yeah, we can. You see the slides there.
Okay, great. And you can see agenda?
Yep, looks good.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, John. Okay, so we're going to discuss a few trending topics and areas around arrearages and repayment capacity. So we've created some tools, and we want to share those tools and resources with you so that you can, too, be successful in your workouts. So we're going to take a few in the next following slides. We're going to talk about the underwriting worksheet, and we're also going to talk about the late calculation worksheet. But first, I'm going to go ahead and start with the underwriting worksheet. And it's important for you all to know that I'm not an attorney and I'm not providing you legal advice. I am a workout specialist and I'm an underwriter, so that's my specialty. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm giving any legal advice by any stretch. Also, I want to make sure that everybody knows and understands that you need to always refer to your most recent state and/or county guidelines for specific laws and regulations. All right. Okay, so the underwriting worksheet, what we use this worksheet for is to determine repayment capacity and affordability. We don't want to put somebody into a worse financial situation or setting them up to fail or a redefault. So that's why it's important to know what you're working with and not just your a pay stub. So you kind of need to understand the total picture of housing and expenses. So in the underwriting worksheet, that's what we're focusing on is repayment capacity. Okay, so let me just go ahead and jump to the worksheet. And everybody can still see it, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there we go. It's showing up.
Right. So this is, you can see it now? Perfect. Okay, so first I'm going to go ahead and, this is the underwriting worksheet that I use currently in every workout before I make any type of decision, before I serve it up to management. I need to perform this underwrite and make sure that I know that I'm not putting them into a worse financial situation, or I'm not giving away the farm because they clearly can afford the debt. So at the top, I'm just going to start at the top, and I've just created a header. So the debtors on the note is in A, column A. Now, if you have a third and fourth borrowers, because sometimes you will see that, just go ahead and add them underneath your wages for your borrower one and borrower two. I always put my comments into the worksheet as I go, just so that if I have a break in concentration or a phone call, I can quickly pick back up my thought process to make a decision. The next is earning type. So you need to identify what their earning type is. Are they self-employed or are they a W-2 earner? Do they get a 1099? Do they receive benefit income? So that you're using the call checklist that we referred to earlier in today's call, and you're kind of using that in concert with these worksheets and the borrower's financial package. Okay, so once you've determined that, you're just going to want to notate so that you know that either the W-2, there's deductions on their pay stubs, or a 1099, they're considered self-employed, so you should be looking for a Schedule C. Okay, each company has different guidelines, so you as a business owner need to create your targeted ratios. Our current ratios are front end, 45% is your target housing ratio, and just so I make sure that I'm speaking clearly, housing ratio is your mortgage. Your mortgage against your earnings. So that's how you're going to get your target. Your housing ratio is merely your mortgage against how much you earn. The back end ratio is your housing plus your expenses against how much you earn. So you can clearly see that your target back-end ratio is going to be higher because that's including all of your monthly housing expenses and non-housing expenses. Okay? You're also going to want to take into consideration gross and net are clearly different. So when you're creating your company guidelines and policies, you're going to kind of take it case by case, but you've got to be straight across the board. If you're going to take someone's gross, and you can't just pick and choose who's gross and who's net. You're going to want to kind of keep it uniform. That is your standard policy that you take everybody's gross income and net income, and you do some type of average, or in qualifying for a modification, your company policy is net income because that's what they're actually taking home. Okay. The next critical information piece is pay frequency. How often do they get paid? Do they get paid semi-monthly? Do they get paid bi-weekly? And if you want to just need to elaborate, semi-monthly equals 24 months or 24 pay periods per year, and bi-weekly is the 26 pay periods. There's an additional pay period in July and December. So if you're analyzing income in those months, you're going to be looking for three pay steps. That's only on bi-weekly. Semi-monthly is typically the 15th and the last day of the month, 5th and the 20th. Okay, the calculation method is actually the core of how you came to the net and gross earnings. So once you figure out they are paid semi-monthly, you're going to take that amount, how often they get paid, so you have that locked down. You're going to take the amount they get paid, and that's where you're going to actually calculate. I'll show you an example. They get paid $1,500. They get paid 24 months in a year. That equals $36,000. Divided by 12, and we know that that's 3. So in this specific case, this debtor's calculation method that was used was that they get paid semi-monthly. They get paid $1,500 semi-monthly over 12 months. That equals an average of $3,000 gross monthly income. Okay. You do that same logic for net and gross, and you can clearly see the difference, and so that's why I have different columns for net and gross, whichever you decide to use. On the hardship package, we send out an application. It's similar to a residential mortgage affidavit, and it's more or less an application for a loan modification. There's a page that's all of your expenses for them to state. You as have the right, if you as an underwriter deem it necessary, to stip for the actual proof or evidence of those expenses. That's your call. Or you can go off of the stated. Okay. Down here at the bottom where you can see my cursor, I've built in a formula so that it's going to add in all of them together for you. So at your bottom line, the formula is built in. Okay, just be careful when you're cutting, when you're pasting or when you're cutting, don't cut your formulas out or you'll have to re-add them. And anywhere that there is an actual total, I went in and created formulas for you guys to make it a little bit easier. Okay. Okay, down here at the bottom, and this is just kind of like, you can't really complete your underwrite on income calculation alone or expense calculation alone, because you need to evaluate the credit report, you need to establish liens, judgments, you need to establish what their first mortgage, if it's been modified, is it impounded, is there a HOA, do they have private mortgage insurance, is there second mortgages? Is there other mortgages altogether? So this is where I kind of keep that information so that I can build a story. So I enter in all of the information, I underwrite the entire file, and before I make a decision. So you're just going to go through. You can also, if you have a really good debtor on the phone, you can actually do this while they're on the phone. You're always going to want a workout package for paper trail, but if you want to fast track and get them a deal and get money in the door, there's nothing saying that you can't do this while they're on the phone. If it's a good debtor and giving you good information, you can run with it. Okay. Does anybody have any questions on this worksheet so far? Am I moving too fast? Am I speaking clearly?
Kristen, I don't know if you can see the questions box. We did have one question from Chris. He said, is backend the rest of their income less the 45% housing ratio? So 100 minus 45 would equal the 55%?
Okay, I'll do an example. So if income is $5,000 and expenses are $750, so that's $5,750. And let's just say their income is $10,000, you're going to take that figure, you're going to take their total earnings and divide it . Does that make sense? And that's going to get your target back in. So that if you just add 100 minus, no, that's not the correct logic. I'm not sure if I'm understanding the question correctly, but the housing ratio, the front end ratio is just, let's say you have a first mortgage, a second mortgage, and you divide it by the value. Okay. The debt ratio is just you're taking the income, 5750, dividing it by the income. And I can make a job aid, John, to kind of outline an example, because when you see examples, it makes a lot more sense.
Cool, sounds good.
Okay, so, and again, I've seen a lot of different situations for if they can't, most of these borrowers are going to present a workout or present their expenses and income as if they can't afford it. So you're going to want to just take it case by case. And there are going to be times where it's going to appear that you're putting them into a higher end ratio, but you have to take in consideration that you need to recover something. And a lot of people's expenses, people live outside of their means, and there's a lot of corners that they can cut, or they can, you know, that we're credit counselors practically. So once they see it on paper, you know, you can sometimes see where people are living outside of their means, and that their income against their housing, they can clearly afford it.
All right, sounds good. That's all the questions for now. If you want to keep going.
Okay, so I just made a note here that I'm going to create examples of housing ratio and debt ratio because they're very different, not to be confused. So I'll just go ahead and give that to you, John, after the call. All right, so going back to, we're going to jump, before I go to the late calculation worksheet, does anybody have any questions around underwriting or calculating income? Okay.
Yeah, it looks like we don't have any questions.
Okay, we're going to go to the – cool. Awesome. If you come up with a question later because you're scratching your head, or if I'm not speaking clearly enough, and I do apologize for that, just hit me up later. I'm always here for you, okay? Now I'm going to the late calculation worksheet. And just to make sure everybody understands clearly what I use this worksheet for is that we currently use this calculation worksheet to determine the arrearages. So I use it in all exit strategies to determine, even before I have a conversation with a debtor or a debtor's attorney, I want to know how much they owe. So when you get your tape, you're always going to have information in your, when you get your collateral, you're gonna have your information. So based on your tape and your note and your credit report, and you're going to fill this worksheet out with those informations alone. Okay, I'm just going to start at the top again, just like I did on the last worksheet. Okay, that top portion is just January through December, and I've created those actual totals for you so that it will carry over your total into column N. Okay, the first step before you can intelligently complete this worksheet, when is the last paid and when is the next due? Okay, so that's the first step. To get your original loan balance, and now I'm on row 13, column A, you're going to go to your note or your tape. Your UPB, again, you're going to go to your tape or your CBR, which is Credit Bureau Report acronym. Your original rate is going to come from your note. Your original payment is going to come from your note. Your arrearages and lates are going to be figured, and this is a formula that's pulled over from the worksheet on the right. And then your absolute bottom line total due is also a formula built in that's going to pull over for you. Okay, there's some critical notes here that I want you to be aware of. Always make sure you're using the correct rate in term in your calculation or your numbers are going to be off. And always refer to your note for the actual type of lien that you're running an amortization schedule for. And that last sentence right there, you're looking at fixed and seconds. You're looking at equity lines. You're looking at a lot of different notes. So that's the first step. You're going to kind of want to see, are you looking at a fixed and second? Or are you looking at a HELOC? Okay, I just went ahead and provided you a resource right there in the middle of the worksheet, that www.mycalculators.com, the free tool. The information that you need is you need a loan amount, you need the first payment date, you need the term, and you need the rate. So based on that information, you can pull your amortization schedule. Based on your tape, you're going to quickly know exactly where your last paid and your next due. And that's how you're going to determine what that interest, that the delinquent interest was at that time of delinquency. Okay? Because this case, I've already pulled the amortization schedule for training purposes and for time. I didn't want it I wanted it to be quicker, so I went ahead and did the legwork before. Okay, so this, I know they're due for 6/1/2009. I already pulled the amortization schedule, and the delinquent interest that month that they fell late down was $386.25. So I'm going to start my calc right here, right? So normally when you get a home loan, you pay. And every month you pay, your delinquent, your interest payment is going down throughout the life of the loan. When you stop paying, your interest payment doesn't go down because you stopped paying. So currently we use that interest payment to start our delinquent interest calculation. Okay? I'm just going to fill in the worksheet so that you can see exactly where the formulas are. at a glance, oops, my bad, sorry. We're not in 2016 yet. Apologize. Okay, here we go. All right, so based on the facts that we know, and on this specific case, we know that they are $30,513 is their delinquent interest. Okay, when they stop paying on their mortgage, they paid it down to $50,000. And I'm just putting in all these payments so that you can kind of see. Okay. So you're going to reference your note for your late fees. Let's just say that they are, you know, 74 months past due, and their late fee is either $20 or 10%. So you're going to go with that. This, let me just figure that for you. I'm just using raw calculations here, everybody. Let's just say he's 84 months past due. And if somebody wants to add that together, they can do that for me. And we're saying that it was $20 for late payment. So I'm going to go ahead and add the $1,680 for late fees. Okay. Underwriting fee. And every note, most HELOCs have an annual fee. Fixed in seconds typically don't. So this one didn't have an annual fee. So now that we know, we can kind of see that the numbers are changing. So based on this calculation and based on our fees that we've added in, the arrearages, the cherries on top that we like to call it, is $33,543.75. Okay, but when they stopped paying their loan, they still owed $50,000, right? So you add those together, and so the total due is $83,543.75. So when you're having the conversation, you can say, thank you for returning my call, Mr. Debtor. I see that you're due for June 1st, 2009. That makes you $30,000 delinquent, including your late fees. It's $32,193.75. Because we performed an underwrite to get a loan mod, that's why we're always using our lender fees for underwriting and processing fees of $1,350. Okay, so the grand total of arrearages is $33,543.75, and the total due is $83,543.75. Does anybody have any questions? Was I moving too fast?
No, we don't have any questions yet. If you have any, just go ahead and put them in the chat box here, and we'll get those.
Okay. Sure. I did put a little formula down there at the bottom. You're going to want to see your HELOCs are a little bit more complicated in calculating the delinquent interest only because they have pre-draw periods, they have post-draw periods, they have margins. They have a lot of different factors that go in. Most likely you're going to look for when they fell delinquent and what was the rate at that time. Okay. In this case, the rate was 4 1/8. Plus 1 1/4 margin. So in this specific case, I would use 5 3/8 in my actual amortization schedule. Again, I do this for every single solitary loan in our portfolio for all of our investors.
Kristen, can you explain again how you came up with the late fees and then maybe mention how you came up with the underwriting fee?
Absolutely. Okay. So first I'll go to the late fees. So every promissory note, I take that back. Not every single solitary note has a late fee on it, but most do and they should. Okay. So you're going to want to look at your promissory note and search for the late fee section. And it's going to tell you what their late fee is. What I see most common in seconds is I see a percentage or a dollar amount, whichever is greater. Okay, so let's just say that we looked at this note, and this note said that the late fee is 10% or $20 of whichever is greater of the monthly payment. This monthly payment is $735.20, so $735.20 times 10%. Everybody knows that that would be, you know, so the $73.52 or 20. So they're going to charge the $73.52, and we have, you know, you count how many months they are past due, and you times that late fee times how many months past due they are to get that lump sum of late fees. So you're going to refer to your note for the actual digits. Then you're going to count how many months past due, and you're going to take the late payment times months past due for your total. Does that make sense in that part, on that question?
Yeah, so in the example you have in the spreadsheet, you took the number of months times 20, but if it was 10%, then you would have done it times the 73.50 or whatever it was.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I'm just using raw, rough calculation numbers. But if we want to get technical, let's just say that we're 73 months past due. Well, 73.52 times 73 months past due. So if that's what the note said, then their late fees would be $5,366.96. Okay, so it's going to be different on every single solitary note. So you're always going to reference your note. Okay, I just want to make a critical note. When you're writing trials, you have to adhere, or it's strongly recommended by attorneys, to just keep the late fee that's tied to the promissory note they originally signed in your trial. So don't go changing the late fees in your trial mod, just keep it what the original note supports.
Okay. The late fees accrue.
Go ahead. What's that?
We had a question. Do the late fees accrue interest?
What about late fees?
Do they accrue interest?
No, that's why they're in a separate bucket.
Okay.
Okay. Separate from the delinquent interest, but they're in the grand total.
Got it.
Okay, so lender underwriting fee, that's going to be different for every company, and that's the niche of this, that's the beauty of this business, because you are the business owner and you get to make the rules. So if you want your lender underwriting fee, we charge the $400 for processing and the $995 for underwriting. So that's where I get that $1,350 lump sum for lender underwriting fee. Okay, I do not charge that fee until we actually get the financial package and an underwrite is performed.
Okay. All right, let's see what other questions we have. Someone pointed out that on the sheet you have it listed for the full year of 2015, it should just stop at July, right?
Oh, yes, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
You guys are awesome. See, I did it on purpose. I was just making sure you guys were on your toes.
Right, just make sure you're paying attention, okay?
Okay, and that's the awesome thing with Google Docs is I just changed it so you guys could see the edit.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
We had a question. Can you show how you calculated the fixed delinquent interest?
Okay, so I went to that's what the example in this screen is for the fixed in second. I went to the promissory note and it said that it was a fixed 9.875% rate for 240 months. Okay, and that was based on a loan amount at the time that they borrowed, which is different from with the rough number that I used of 75. And that's what I pulled the amortization schedule to get to that 386.25. Do you want me to go? Actually, I can take you to the schedule. You want me to do a live example, John?
Yeah, let's do that.
Do we have time for that?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to go to the main loan calculator. Okay, and we're, this is where we're going to use our numbers. Okay, 50,000. We said it was 240 months. We said the interest rate was 9.875, and that's how it comes to a 478.38 payment. We also know that the first payment, let me just go back to make sure, the first payment was 3-1-2006, so I'm going to change that to 3-1-2006, okay? And then I'm going to view amortization schedule. Okay, and this is what, this is the result that it is. This is, this should match the same amortization schedule that they were provided in their loan documents that they signed when they executed their promissory note. I'm going to go down. You can kind of see that I like this schedule because it does lumps for 12 months at a time. So you can kind of quickly toggle down and to see that we know that they're due for June 1st, right, 2009. So you're going to go to line 40 and see that it's 386.25. Does everybody see my screen right there?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay. So that's how I got the 386. How do I get back, John?
You want to exit full screen?
Mm-hmm.
Try hit escape.
Yeah, it won't work.
Go to the top, go to view.
Here we go. Oh, go to what?
Go to the top in the Chrome, when the Chrome comes down. Put your mouse all the way to the top, and then under view, yep.
Okay.
Under view, go to exit full screen.
Got it.
There you go.
There we go. All right. So, does anybody have any questions on... I got this information right here on the loan calculator straight from the note. I want to view amortization schedule so that I can see that schedule that I brought up on the screen. You go down and you look for the actual date they fell delinquent and they're due for, which we saw was 386.25, right? So that's your number that you're working with. So you're going to complete the top portion of the worksheet, starting with the day that they are due for. You're going to enter in that delinquent interest amount for every month until present day of July. By doing that, you're going to see what the just the delinquent interest alone is $20,582.50. The late fees alone are $5,366.96. I added in the lender fees. There was no annual fee. And there is your grand total. This is your arrearages. The $35,299.46. We all know that you have to add that to the actual unpaid principal balance, which was in this case, we're using the $50,000. Okay. If it was an interest-only loan, that original loan balance, they borrowed $50,000, and when they fell delinquent, it's $50,000 because they never paid anything towards the principal. I'm sorry, what was your question, John?
We had a question. How about compounding the late interest?
Compounding your, okay, so that you would need to talk to an attorney because it's not allowed I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to comment on compounding interest. We don't compound interest. But it's a big, for debate. So I would refer you to an attorney when you're talking compounding interest.
Okay. We had a clarifying question here. So if they make partial or interim payments, do you take the flat interest based on the remaining principal balance?
When you say partial payments, are you saying that were they on a trial or what? I'm not sure. What do you mean? Why would they be paying partial?
We'll see if we can get a clarifying on that. I'm assuming if they had
I just don't
made,
want to,
yeah, if they so I if they made a payment between now and June 2009, if they had made a few payments, would that affect this sheet here?
So let me just make sure I understand the correction. So you're asking if they were to make a few payments that paid down the unpaid principal balance, would it change the worksheet?
Right.
Okay, I'll show you, because that's why this is a great exercise. So let's just say that they paid it down. Let's say that the original loan amount was $75,000 and they paid it down to $50,000. Okay, so let's jump back to our calculator, because now we have to change the loan amount because it's based on the original was $75,000. Okay, so now your payment is $717,57, right? So yes, so now that's absolutely going to change. So that's why I wanted to actually show you. That's why it's so critical that you're looking at good numbers to do when you're running your calcs.
Okay.
So when you're doing your amortization calculator, you're using the amount they borrowed, the number of months, interest rate to get that original payment because you want it to match your note. So let's just use this example, this new example that someone asked. So we know that our figure prior was they are due for June 1st, 2009. So before our delinquent interest payment was $386.25, and just by using the correct note amount, the interest is $579.38. So just by using the incorrect number, it does change your interest calculation. So that's why the critical notes are on the worksheet and that you're always to refer to your actual collateral before you make an assumption of what the total due is.
Okay, we had a clarifying answer. He says, no, most times when someone is late, they have made partial payments prior to going totally default.
That's I'm not sure that I understand the question correctly, because mortgage companies typically don't accept partial payments. So for the reason of why are they paying, why they're paying it, and still the amortization schedule and the delinquent interest is tied to the original note and how much they borrowed. So maybe whoever that party is that's asking that question, maybe we could have a conversation offline so that I can make sure that I'm getting the correct question answered.
Gotcha. Okay, we can always unmute you as well if you want. So let me know in the chat if you want. We can unmute you and you can ask Kristen directly. While we're waiting on that, we had one more question here. How do you explain this data to the borrower?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. And so usually I start the conversation, Miranda conversation, just kind of get a pulse check, get a good feel, get a feel for the borrower where they're at. And then I kind of say, you know, I know that you're aware the loan has been transferred. It may have been an oversight, but gosh, I haven't received a payment since June of 2009. What's going on? And so then I'm getting the hardship, I'm getting their story at the same time. as I'm saying, well, you know, because you're due for June of 2009, your delinquent interest alone is $28,582.50. And because there's late fees that have incurred, your total is $33,949. That's added to what you actually borrowed, Mr. Borrower. Were you aware that your total due is $85,299.46? And usually by this time they're falling out of their chair because they had no idea that the delinquent interest creeps up like it does. But that's kind of usually how I do a soft blow of the delinquent interest piece on the phone.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to try to unmute John. John was the one asking the question earlier. We'll see
okay.
the audio here. So, John, give me 1 second to unmute you. All right, John, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you
Hi,
go ahead?
John.
Hello, how are you doing? Okay. I don't know in this case, but I've run into cases, especially with the mortgages that I have, where I've made more principal balance payment on notes than what the note should normally have, or situations like that in the past, which skews your whole amortization schedule. So what I'm looking for is if the actual principal balance doesn't run straight through on your amortization, can you then just take your principal balance times, in this case, the 9.875 divided by 12, which gives you a monthly interest quota number?
If at the end of the day the delinquent interest is correct, and that if you were to get subpoenaed for your records, it would hold up in court, then I would run with it.
Okay, I was just wondering how to manipulate this, because this is great if the guy just made his normal payment every month throughout the cycle, but sometimes people skip payments, they add to payments. Yeah, there's some stuff that happens in the life of the loan.
Yeah, first of all, I would ask the borrower just to provide evidence to support what they're saying, because just on raw information, there's no way upon loan transfer you would know that.
Okay.
So just have them provide you evidence, you know, to support it so that you can send it back to the underwriting department for them to re-crunch the numbers.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. Okay, it looks like we don't have any questions right now. If anybody has any additional questions, then go ahead and put them in there now, and we'll go ahead and address that. One thing I'll mention real quick is that after the call, we're going to be posting the updated worksheet inside of the members area on the resources page, and we'll, of course, get the training recording from today up as well this afternoon. But any final questions on this, go ahead and ask them now. All right, well, I don't see any more in here. Kristen, if you have anything else you wanted to cover on this specifically, then go ahead and jump in. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and wrap up the call.
Yeah, let's just see. I just want to make sure that I didn't miss anything. And, you know, on this, just for me personally as a workout specialist, I use the late calculation. I also put my rent markets, my fair market value, I put a lot of other information in this bottom portion where I have it highlighted on the screen, so that it makes it a lot easier for me when I do get the debtor call or a debtor's attorney call. Then I could kind of see where my thought process, the questions that I wanted to ask. A lot of times, based on financials that I do receive, it leads to a lot of additional questions before I can make a sound decision what's in best interest for Capstone. So I use this worksheet. I heavily rely on this worksheet with my phone calls in concert with my tape and my underwriting worksheet. So I constantly have all three tools up while I'm working my files, while I'm managing the files, and while I'm talking to the borrowers. And that's all I kind of had to say about it.
Okay. Sounds good. Oh, we have one question just came in. Do you have any opening for negotiation at this point? Not sure I understand that question there.
What do you want to, yeah, what do we want to negotiate?
Do you have any opening presented for negotiation at this point? Not sure what
so, that. So, just, so am I, just so I'm understanding the question, are you asking, like, based on these numbers right here, right now, what I would do? Or what, I'm sorry, maybe I don't understand the question.
All right, let's see if we can unmute here. All right, hey, Gloria, are you there? You able to hear us? Okay. Oh, she says, yes, are you giving them wiggle room?
Okay, so as far, pardon me?
Sorry, go ahead.
So when she says wiggle room, meaning wiggle room for the repay or wiggle room for, I'm a little cloudy on the question still.
For the negotiation. Let's see. She says yes.
So
are you giving any indication you're willing to work with them at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I, as an asset manager, I'm trying to be the good cop, and I'm trying to say, hey, I'm on your side. What's your intent? If your intent is to stay in the home, my intent is to keep you in the home. But the board of directors, I'm at their mercy. Everything has to be approved by the board of committee, but I'm here to help you, borrower. You know, what do you want to stay in your home? What's your intent? Are you done? Are you ready to walk away? You know, so I kind of, I build a relationship so that I make them think that I'm on their side. Then they tell me more information. And at the end of the day, I do want to work out on every deal. So that's, I really am on their side, you know, not giving away the farm again, but I am on their side as far as my job is to work it out. So I don't feel that I'm doing them a justice if I'm not actually working it out.
But at this point, you're just collecting information. Is that
collecting information. Yep, you're absolutely right, Gloria. But if they are willing to get on a trial while their file is being processed and underwritten and to the board, I can go ahead and put them on a short-term trial to get money in the door and get that debt affirmed.
Okay. Okay.
So a trial, I'm all about it, you know, quickly with little to no information, but a perm or a semi-perm mod in the situation that we're actually talking about waiving anything or eligibility for forgiveness, absolutely I don't until I got the lockdown financials.
Okay. Just looking for some money in the door if you can negotiate it to begin.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I always start with a $5,000 down payment. That's where I always usually start. If it's anywhere in the UPB is roughly, let's just say 50 to 100,000, I try to get a minimum of five, depending on the delinquency and depending on the total amount due. I do ask for more of a down payment. It's a case-to-case basis.
Well, they've just been shocked by this number. They didn't know.
Exactly. So that's why I kind of wanted to set an appointment for the next conversation and not just throw out, well, you have to give me $10,000 down payment before we'll even have a conversation. I don't want to do that because they'll go dark.
Okay. All right. Well, you've got some good skills there.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Does anyone have any more final questions? Just type them in, give it another second here, and then if not, we will go ahead and wrap up the call for today. All right, well, I don't see any coming through, so if you guys have any questions that you come up with later, then definitely feel free to reach out to us. The best way to do that is to go to the hotline submission form, and fill out the form there. And that's at capstonefundinggroup.com/hotline. And you submit your question. We'll get back to you as soon as we can on that. And we'd be happy to answer any questions on anything that you need help with, including the worksheets that we discussed today. Again, we will be posting the updated spreadsheet inside of the members area this afternoon. And then we'll send out an email with the instructions for that, the link to download, and then we'll also send out a few things Aaron mentioned earlier with links to hotel and whatnot for the upcoming workshop in July. But again, make sure to register for that if you want to come out to that. And if anything else comes up, definitely let us know, and we will go from there. So thanks for joining us today. If we can do anything, reach out to us, and we'll go from there. Otherwise, we will see you on our next call. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.